Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new day, and thank you for kicking it off with us right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. It is 9:05 on the clock. Got your host, James J. behind the mic. I am joined by Melissa K.
Good morning, good morning.
And Beth Habhager.
Good morning.
A little bit later, I want to get into something that restaurants are trying, a paper kind of thing. And we've got some That Ain't Right stories and good stories of the day coming up for you. But right now, everybody, you know how we start off 9 o'clock hours on Mondays. We do it with the kitchens open.
That's right. Today is Monday, February 27th. And the Kitchens Open is sponsored by Chatterbox Restaurants and Catering. Yay. Chatterbox Catering is a full-service catering company equipped for all your catering needs.
Their restaurant is open 7 days a week with a fish fry special on Fridays. Right now during Lent, they are doing fish fry to go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Chatterbox Restaurant. I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but that is just so cool. I'm so happy for you too. That's so awesome.
All right, I get out of the way. Excited to have them. So today we're going to talk about, as James mentioned earlier, fish.
Yeah.
Why? Well, because preparing fish intimidates me.
Aw.
We only ate baked fish at home when I was a kid. I don't think my mom was really confident preparing fish either. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my dad didn't cook.
Ooh.
But I love, love, love my mom's baked fish recipe. However, I found out since then that many people think it sounds like a terrible way to prepare fish. But the recipe is so simple. You put frozen cod fillets in a glass 9x13 pan, cover them with a container of sour cream, and dollop the top with butter. Cover it with tinfoil and bake in the oven for 350 for about 45 minutes. The fish comes out flaky and moist, and the addition of massive amounts of sour cream and butter mean you don't even need tartar sauce.
Mm.
Now, when we would visit my grandparents on my mom's side, Grandpa would usually take us out for a fish fry on Friday, and then I would get the deep-fried cod. And that was an absolute treat.
Yum.
So today we're going to dive into how to prepare fish fries, and probably get a dose of history along the way.
I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll dive into the fish subject.
Yes. Well, actually, Beth, let's start with the history.
A little bit, yeah.
So I didn't grow up Catholic, and actually in the religion I was raised in, you were taught that vegetarianism is the healthiest way to eat, and you weren't supposed to eat meat at all. But they did consider fish to be the healthiest option if you were going to eat meat. So we're already into Lent, mm-hmm. which this year runs from February 22nd through April 6th. I know how to Google.
Good.
but I believe Moravians also observe Lent. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's a Christian tradition, and it's to be the 40 days, not including Sundays. So Sundays are almost bonus days. They're set aside because they are the Sabbath. So it's the 40 days prior to Easter. And it ties into Jesus' time in the wilderness. He spent 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness being tempted by the tempter or the devil or Satan, whatever translation you use. Just before he starts his earthly ministry. So it's kind of the way I explained it to my congregation yesterday, it's the beginning of his journey towards Jerusalem and towards the cross. So Lent is our beginning of our journey towards Jerusalem and the cross, which happens on Good Friday.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, and so the tradition was that you don't eat meat on Fridays, and part of it is during Lent we recognize that Jesus gave up his life for us, so we give up something that means something to us to start to understand what that sacrifice is. And for some people, it's giving up meat on Fridays.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, and according to the U.S. Catholic website, Jesus fasted and abstained from food to be closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
The tradition of abstaining from meat for early Christians was to show them that something tastes better when you've longed for it. It teaches gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Not eating meat was foregoing a luxury. During that era in the Mediterranean world in late winter, meat was rare. Friday is the day Christ died, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. so abstaining from meat is symbolic to commemorate the sacrifice. And this is interesting as well to me. Friday is also the day God created animals, so it's a symbolic day of execution for cows, pigs, and sheep.
And that's actually in one of the two stories of creation. There are actually two stories of creation in Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
So little fun fact there. So technically, it's the flesh of warm-blooded animals that's off limits during Lent, not just meat. So fish are actually cold-blooded creatures, so they're considered fair game. You can go ahead and have fish. Historically, medieval Christians abstained from the warm-blooded animals on every Friday, Wednesdays, Saturdays, Advent, Lent, and other holy days. So fish became a necessary commodity, unless people just wanted to meet meals consisting of vegetables.
So according to an article I found on NPR.org called Lust, Lies, and Empire, The Fishy Tale Behind Eating Fish on Friday.
Wow.
Great title.
That is awesome.
Well, they discussed how this lusting for fish drove the global fishing industry during that time. At first, the Christians' religious appetite was largely met with herring. These are plentiful but dry and tasteless when smoked or salted.
Mm-hmm.
This was a necessary evil since they didn't have any way to preserve them in medieval times. But eventually, cod took over as the dominant fish, and it hasn't lost that title in Wisconsin, to be sure.
Absolutely. And Vikings were excellent at preserving cod. They used dried and salted cod as a form of a jerky on their long sea voyages. Their voyages following the natural range of the Atlantic cod may have even led them to Canada before Columbus made his discovery. But it's theorized that they didn't reveal their source to keep the competition away.
I can't let them know where your sources are. Well, jumping forward to the 1960s, when Pope Paul VI removed most of the fasting rules, the ones kept in place, the Friday meat ban.
And enter the Friday fish fry tradition. Woohoo! Now, fish fries are extremely popular in Wisconsin, and you may argue that we have the best fish fries any place that you can find. And in fact, there are a lot of states that don't even observe a fish fry Friday. Mm. I missed them when I lived in North Dakota. And you can argue which restaurant has the best Friday fish fry. Uh-huh. Just make sure that you share that. But the reasons for this are many and varied. We're located close to one of the nation's Great Lakes, and that's made fish plentiful and affordable for us.
Mm-hmm. Now, the European immigration to Wisconsin consisted of many Catholics of German, Polish, and other backgrounds whose religion didn't allow them to eat meat on Fridays. Mm-hmm. So according to the website for the famous Ambassador Hotel in Milwaukee, Wisconsin's population in the early 1900s of immigrants was one-third German. The Fitz restaurant in the hotel tells the story of Prohibition and how restaurants were looking for a cheap and easy way to keep the doors open. Fish fries were a great way to get people in the door and maybe sell a few illegal pints under the table.
Most fish fries have a family menu, though. They have a familiar
mm-hmm.
yes, menu. Often you'll see fish, cabbage, potato, rye bread, and beer. The fish option may vary from battered fried cod, perch, bluegill, walleye, smelt, and in some areas along the Mississippi River, catfish.
Yum.
The cabbage is almost always coleslaw, but in some places you can get it cooked if you wanted to. The potato salad has a variety of options, but traditional places will offer a German potato salad, coming back mm-hmm. to those German roots. These foods were plentiful and cheap, and the combination made the standard fish fry meal.
Now, Prohibition played a part because tavern owners needed a way to get people into their establishments when they could no longer advertise selling beer. They advertised a salty, cheap meal that could bring in the whole family. Many of them still sold the beer on the sly, even though they couldn't advertise it.
So let's get to the part that scares Melissa just a little bit. Making fish at home. It is totally possible, even for beginners. There's a ton of recipes out there that aren't intimidating at all, that are fast and easy.
Sure.
Most of the fish available in our area, though, is frozen. You can thaw it first, but there are many recipes that allow you to cook it right from frozen.
Mm. Yeah, okay, Beth, sure. That sounds great, but I'm still a little hesitant. The thawing part is where I usually have trouble. So can we start there?
Yes, Melissa, we can absolutely start there. The best way to thaw fish is overnight in the refrigerator.
That requires planning, Beth.
Well, yes, but it's not that hard. The night before you want to cook it, just remove it from the packaging and put it on a plate that you've lined with paper towels or a tea towel.
You take it out of the package? Well, that's where I've always messed up then.
You need to take it out of the package so the liquid melting off the fish has a place to go. Hence the towel on the plate.
I see. See what I did there?
Yeah, you're right, Melissa. After it's been in the fridge for about 10 to 12 hours, you can rinse the fish to remove any of the remaining ice, then pat it dry before cooking to remove any excess moisture. This method will preserve the integrity of the fish and inhibit the growth of harmful bacteria. You don't want bacteria with your meal.
No. Well, that doesn't sound too hard. I just have to plan ahead.
Yep.
But what if I don't remember to plan ahead?
Well, you're not out of luck then. You can defrost fish using the quick thaw method.
Aha, I'm all ears.
So just like the first method, you'll remove the fish from its original packaging, but this time you'll place it in a Ziploc bag. Next, fill a bowl with cool water, not warm. It has to be cool for safety reasons. You'll need to put something heavy on top of the fish to keep it submerged under the water. Mm-hmm. After about 20 to 30 minutes, check to see if it's defrosted. If not, refill the bowl with cool water again and submerge it again. Once it's thawed, be sure you spend extra time patting it dry since it will have picked up some of the moisture from the ice while it's thawing.
Hmm. All right. That doesn't sound too terrible. But what if I just want to cook it from frozen? You said I could do that too, right?
That's right. You can cook fish directly from the freezer, and it starts with the same first step. Take the fish out of the packaging.
Thanks, Gordon Ramsay. I kind of figured that part out by now.
I'm just teasing. The next step is rinsing it under cold water to remove any of the ice that's on the surface of the fish. Pat it dry with a paper towel or a tea towel. Are we getting the message
here? The tea towel
here?
Again. Does anyone have tea towels in their kitchen? What even is a tea towel?
It's just a kitchen towel, Mel. Now, here's the important part, though. You brush the fish with a thin layer of olive oil or marinade and season it just to taste.
Aha.
Now, baking, poaching, or steaming are the best methods to cook fish if you're not going to thaw it first. Hmm. Add a few minutes to the recipe you're following to make sure the frozen fish is fully cooked. You need to reach 145 degrees Fahrenheit or 63 degrees Celsius internally for fish to be cooked thoroughly.
So a kitchen thermometer is my friend with this.
Yep.
Okay. Is that true with any method of cooking fish then?
Yes. You always want to cook your fish until it's done, unless you're having sushi.
Ugh. Beth, that's the opposite of what we're talking about here.
Right. Sorry. Cooking fish is really easy and quick. You can bake it in the oven, saute or pan fry it, grill, poach, or deep fry it. You can even make it in the microwave.
Ugh. I don't know about that. But I do feel a little more confident in the thawing process, which goes a long way toward making me feel better about trying to cook fish. Thank you, Beth.
You're welcome, Melissa. Anytime.
And if I still feel like I'm not ready to tackle it, I could always go to Chatterbox and have an excellent Wisconsin fish fry.
That's right. And remember, they have fish fry to go during Lent, so you can even take it home with you and pretend you made it yourself.
Beth, that feels a little bit like cheating.
Yeah. Maybe, but that's okay. It's good.
Okay, then. A big thank you to our sponsors, Chatterbox Restaurant and Catering, for sponsoring our Kitchen Open segment.
If you have dining or catering needs, contact Kathy at the Chatterbox Restaurant and Catering, and she will find you the perfect menu for your party. Call her at 715-712-3393 and cook up something good.
And with that, let's close the kitchen.
All right.
That was a good one, you two. That was really good. Thank you so much. And again, a big shout out to Chatterbox Restaurant. Nice work, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
Take a break. We'll come back with some entertainment news, but make sure to be listening and joining us every Monday in the 9 o'clock hour to catch the kitchens open. We'll have more for you coming up right here on The Morning Show at WFHR, locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody, to The Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Got Melissa, Beth, and James here with you. And a little bit later after Melissa's news, we're going to get into pay-per-chew.
Paper chew?
Yes, restaurants trying subscription programs. I want to touch on that a little bit. We'll get into that a little bit later. But right now, some entertainment news for you. And we're going to start things off with, a classic rock fraud, possibly. Possibly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I feel comfortable saying that. Joe Walsh has entertained us for many, many years, Mr. Joe Walsh. And part of one of the bigger songs that he has done that with, let me see if this will work. So listen to this next line here. My Maserati does 185. I lost my license. Now I don't drive. Okay, so that line right there, pretty famous line. I think that many of us that grew up with classic rock, like me, I didn't even picture Joe Walsh. I picture my dad singing that loud as he can and everything. Love Joe Walsh. Well, the 1978 classic that we're got playing in the background here, that was playing in the background there a little bit. I can't keep playing that because otherwise Melissa can't talk. the 78 classic Life's Been Good, Joe Walsh sang, "My Maserati does 185, I lost my license, now I can't drive." But there are two major problems with that lyric. First of all, no Maserati was hitting 185 in 78. The top speed was closer to 133.
Hmm.
And second, at the time of the song came out, Joe had never even owned a Maserati. He eventually bought a 1964 5000 GT, though, and told Rolling Stone, quote, "Everyone was making me feel really guilty, the look of sadness on their face, so I felt like I had to." He had a quote, "I don't know if it goes 185. I chickened out at 140.
Oh.
I love the idea of people taking lyrics seriously.
Yeah,
and it's like I mean, there's a line in the sand on this one. Of course, you can't go too far with this, but I think it's kind of funny to think that for years, you know, big fans of his, Joe, great, I love your music, great guitar player. All this, so I noticed you don't have a Maserati. what? Wait a minute. What? Don't you want to know about the Eagles or like any of this? Yeah. Where's your Maserati? And have you ever taken it to 185? Have you?
Really?
I really feel like if you are disappointed by that, boy, have I got some bad news for you. So I would say 99% of the songs you grew up on, not a little more metaphorical than literal, I would say.
If you believe that, can I sell you some oceanfront property in Arizona?
Yes. I've got a... got a bridge that you're going to love in San Francisco, tell me. Do still love the classics, though.
Yeah.
I do like that song. It is kind of funny, too, that's coming up. You can read the entire article at Rolling Stone or through Road and Track.
Wow.
Speaking of classic rock stars, Gene Simmons from Kiss, bass player, The Demon, all that stuff. Gene Simmons is hitting up the famous Abbey Road studio in England, and he's inviting fans to join him. On July 10th, fans will be able to spend the day with Gene and record a Kiss song with him. No musical experience is necessary, and it'll only cost you about $6,000.
Wow. Oh,
yeah. Just that.
$5,995, but you can bring one guest with you. So, okay, I guess that makes it all fair.
For fine. Two,
well, sure. Take my money, Mr. Simmons.
Yes.
It should be noted that I don't think you can even argue this fact. No music act in history, whether it's a solo artist or a band, has taken advantage of marketing more than Kiss.
Yeah.
Not the Beatles, not the Stones, not anybody, not Taylor Swift. Nobody, to this day, nobody has sold, like treated rock and roll like a business more than Kiss. Incredibly talented artists. My first real live concert was seeing the 96-97 re-tour at the Kohl Center here in Madison, and it almost ruined like music for concerts for me, because I still have not seen a performance like those four people gave, and I did not see them in their prime.
Mm-hmm.
But man, are they showmen. Man, do they give you a performance. But I would think that if you're talking about Kiss, you can't just talk about them musically.
Mm-mm.
Like, you have, like, all those guys, really talented. Paul Stanley, one of the best MCs I've ever seen. Great songwriter, great singer, had a lot of range. Gene Simmons, a very good bass player. Ace Frehley, incredible guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can keep going here and everything. They're all really talented, but they'd be some of the first to tell you, we also sold Kiss underwear. We sold Kiss, you know, comic books. Action figures, lunch boxes.
I had those.
If you, oh, nice, really? Nice, Beth, nice. If you could put it on something, Kiss sold it.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, like, I've seen some people online kind of like giving Gene Simmons a hard time for this and like saying, hey, how much money is too much money and all that. Have you not been paying attention to Kiss? Like, this is who they are. This is, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. I'm just saying that, like, I'm not going to get mad at a dog for barking.
Right.
That's what they do. Like, I'm not going to get mad at Gene Simmons for doing this. This is a big thing of what Gene Simmons is all about, marketing and, you know, promoting the band Kiss. And even though they're not putting out new music, he wants to make sure that the Kiss army stays alive for generation after generation. Do I think it'd be cool to, like, do something like this and then also, like, a contest along with it? Like, hey, you know, I'll also give a set of fans a free trip.
Right.
You know, it's not like Gene Simmons ain't got the money to do it. It isn't like Kiss hasn't got the money to do it. I think that you would win a lot more people over with that, but I'm not going to put that on them.
Right.
Or some of that money go to charity or
exactly
something, you know, for everyone.
It would be nice. It would also be nice, I'll say this very proudly, if unlike like Paul Stanley has been very honest and very open about being Jewish. And that's important nowadays, let mm-hmm. alone for bands that you would never think of those. Maybe you didn't think of that. But Gene and Paul are both Jewish men. And I've never heard Gene really talk about this. And maybe that's his business. And it'd be different if we were talking religion. I'm not talking religion. I'm talking about the creed of Judaism that is in our blood. Mm-hmm. It is in his same blood as his is in mine. And I think that it matters. Representation matters. I think standing up for these things matters. That being said, unless you're going to pay him, I don't know if he'd do it. So, and that's his business. That's his life. Gene Simmons has lived a pretty good life living this way. So, I mean, I'm never going to tell other people what to do with their money. But it would be nice, I would say, mm-hmm. as a fellow tribe member, as somebody who sees them at the meetings. I would. the crying Indian littering PSA from the 70s. I wonder how many people know that that commercial that we're talking about. I know that I saw it as a kid, but I'm a little older than you guys. And I think that even the difference in age, I think, might have played into this, where it was gone by the time you guys were able to take in TV, or if you even watched TV or saw this stuff and everything. But it was a really popular ad for a long time. It was about littering. Mm-hmm. And this Native American man is standing on the side of the road. He sees somebody throw trash out the car window, and you see a single tear come down his cheek. Mm-hmm. Well, it's taken over 50 years, but that commercial featuring a Native American actor, Iron Eyes Cody, has finally been canceled. Many Native American activists have had a problem with the ad campaign for years because it reinforces negative stereotypes. Mm-hmm. So recently, Keep American Beautiful transferred ownership of it to the National Congress of American Indians, and they mm-hmm. are retiring it. They say it'll never again be played without the proper historical context.
Hmm. Okay. Good.
Now, could they have done this a while ago? Maybe. But I would like to focus on today. And way to go, Keep America Beautiful.
Yes.
That's a smart move by your part. Whatever PR you're going to get from this is going to be way bigger than anything you would have gotten from that commercial. And that's mm-hmm. not the reason to do this. Obviously, there's a lot more human reasons to do it. But I always try to touch on the outliers to people, mm-hmm. To the people that are going to push back on things. And, well, money. and you know, hey, there's that part of this that they're doing that they could easily make their money almost, I would make the argument back on when we're talking about a commercial that really hasn't been played much since the 70s. You probably weren't getting a whole lot of PR out of that.
Right.
And what PR you were getting was negative since the 1980s. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think
just
it's smart.
Reinforcing stereotypes.
Yeah.
I also admire the Native National Congress of American Indians for retiring the ad, because, again, they could be making money off of it. They
right.
could be doing something different with that and everything. I think that's noteworthy with this. It's interesting, too, because as we're getting... Well, I get very tired of, hey, you tweeted something bad 20 years ago when you were 13, so now I'm canceling you. I get tired of some of that because that gives people no room to grow and learn.
Right.
Like mm-hmm. That part. But there's also the other part of things where, hey, where have you been? Like, this should have been done before I was even born, let alone when I was a child and everything. Some stuff just seems like it seems so obvious. You know, blackface seems so wrong and so like I can't even understand in the 1920s when they're doing the minstrel shows and stuff. Like, what were they thinking? How did they ever think that this was okay? Let alone in 2023, 100 years later, you know, where we're at. But there's still room. There's still mm-hmm. stuff that we're working on here, and that just speaks to how young of a country we have. And I think giving each other some grace with this, accountability with grace.
Yes,
I think that could go a long ways with not only building bridges and everything, but also getting those outliers, those people that push back on these subjects, mm-hmm. maybe getting them to listen a little bit. I'm not saying you're going to change a person's heart, but if I can get you to listen, then maybe I can get your brain to think a little differently. And that's going to lead to less hate, hopefully, in theory.
Mm-hmm.
Take a break. We'll go ahead and we'll come back with some interesting stuff here. I want to do that pay per chew. We're going to get into that when we come back. Right after Melissa's news here on The Morning Show at WFHR, where we are a locally grown radio. Morning show here. Welcome back, everybody.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can
just my De La Soul. Rest in Power, one of the lead rappers from that band right there that you're listening to, De La Soul, just passed away last week. I'm very, very happy that Seth put that in there. Boy, I don't care if that beat is old or not. It still holds up.
Oh,
that
really
is still
does.
Just a wicked. I love that beat. De La Soul, great band. Haven't listened to De La Soul, go ahead and some De La Soul in your life. I want to get into this one with you, too. Melissa and Beth here with us. And now I'm not doing this just because you guys do the kitchens open.
Sure.
But that being said, you know me well enough by now that if you've told me you like this one thing, I'm going to, like, hang on that one thing a number of times. And I'm learning. I'm getting better. I'm learning more. But this one did interest me. And regardless of if you two had ever even mentioned food before, I would have brought this up with you guys because I'm curious of everybody what they're thinking with this one. It's going to be interesting. Pay per chew. More restaurants trying subscription programs. It's come to us from the Associated Press. Shout out to Deanne Durbin, who does nice reporting for them. You can find the complete article at apnews.com. So I'll just get to you basically the highlights here, some of the more important things I think coming out of this. Consumers are willing to pay monthly subscription fees for streaming services, pet food, and even toilet paper. And now some restaurants are betting they'll do the same for their favorite meals. Large chains like Panera and P.F. Chang's, as well as neighborhood hangouts, are increasingly experimenting with the subscription model as a way to ensure steady revenue and customer visits. Some other unlimited drinks or free delivery for a monthly fee. Others will bring out your favorite appetizer each time you visit. They're following a trend. The average American juggled 6.7 subscriptions in 2020, up from 4.2 in 2019, according to Rocket Money, a personal finance app. For $130 per month, Gravitas Supper Club subscribers get a three-course takeout meal for two. Baker said Gravitas shifted to takeout during the pandemic, but saw demand fizzle once its dining room reopened. The Supper Club, which serves about 60 diners per month, keeps that revenue flowing. The upscale Chinese chain P.F. Chang's also saw an opportunity to increase to-go orders with its subscription plan, which launched in September. For $6.99 per month, members get free delivery, among other perks.
No, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Other restaurants are experimenting with membership, which let diners pay per pay toward their visits. El Lopo in San Francisco Bar has 26 members in its Take Care of Me Club. They pay either $89 per month or $100 in dining credits or $175 per month for $200 in credits. When members come in, El Lopo starts bringing out their favorite dishes. Each visit, they get a free drink to anyone in the bar. But not all subscription programs have had a success. In 2021, On the Border Mexican Grill introduced its Queso Club, which offered free cheese dip for a year for a dollar. The program stopped taking new subscribers a year later. On the Border is now retooling the program and expects to reintroduce it later this year. Other restaurants have dropped subscriptions, saying that they have their hands full just running the kitchen. In late 2020, She-Wolf, an upscale Italian restaurant in Detroit, which is an awesome name. That's a great name.
Yeah.
Started sending subscribers a box of pasta, sauces, and other treats for $80 per month. But when its dining room fully reopened 6 months later, it was too much work to put together hundreds of boxes. Still, She-Wolf is keeping one foot in the subscription space. Dan Ryach, the restaurant's beverage director, sends Italian wines to about 80 subscribers who pay $60 a month for it. So the subscription service, along with the rise of apps and all these things, I think that this is, you know, a big part of where you're seeing this stuff. And I don't think you're not going to see this go away anytime soon. You're only going to see more and more restaurants and businesses trying these kind of things. But first thoughts, what are your feelings off of this one? I'll start with you, Melissa.
Well, I think the subscription service, the one that you mentioned that seemed to make the most sense to me, was the free delivery from P.F. Chang's.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay $6.99 or $7 a month, you always get free delivery from them. That's a pretty good deal if you eat there often. But even the other ones that were, you know, $130, $170 for 1 month and you get one meal, that's not really that far out of the realm of feasibility for people who eat out often. Because you can easily spend that much money between one or two meals. And if you eat out that often, once a month, I mean, it's feasible, but it's a good, reliable source of revenue for these restaurants then. I'm kind of a fan.
I like anything that's going to help restaurants stay open. I'm in favor of that. I'm thinking about not your major chains, but even they have, you know, a leg in this, obviously. But I'm thinking of how we can take those models and adapt them to a local restaurant or a local fast food place, that kind of thing. I'm curious. I like that idea. There's HelloFresh, there's Nutrisystem, there's Clean Eats, there's Signature Bread, there's Quick and Easy. I was trying to think of the name of that company that they'll make the meal for you and send it to you, and all you got to do is prep it. All you got to do is make it. They give you all the ingredients.
Right, that's like HelloFresh is one like that.
There's 90 of them. There's like 100 of these places. I didn't even realize there was that many of them or anything.
They've really blown up.
If they're doing this, if I'm a restaurant and I'm seeing that, I'm like, well, I could do that.
Right.
I could do something similar to that. Now, the big crux of all this, I think, is not so much. I mean, the prices certainly are going to come into play here. It's the staff. It's the people. It's do I have enough people to be able to do this? Mm-hmm. And the only way that can happen is if people are being paid enough to be able to do it. And I don't believe that falls on businesses. I believe that falls on governments giving you a standard of, hey, or states, I'm sorry, states giving you a standard of, hey, this is the set pay.
Right.
You can't go below this pay. Work with it, or I'm sorry, your business isn't going to be around. The idea that, well, this happens, small businesses will close and close and close and all that, and we'll lose this, and this business. That may be true. Some of that may be true. I have a little bit more faith in our entrepreneurs and our businesses owners out there. I believe that they are a lot smarter than people give them credit for, apparently. And if you needed any more proof that we survived these things, look at the last pandemic. Look at the pandemic. All we heard was all these small businesses that we're going to lose. We're going to lose all these different things. And we did lose some. And I am not making light of anybody that lost their livelihood or by any means. Mm-mm. But I am also an American. And what is one of the things we were taught from a young age? You're going to sink or swim. Mm-hmm. If your business is going to survive, it's going to survive. If it isn't, it isn't. And another small business, it's hermit crabs. Another small business will come and move into that building. This is the way of the world. Do you think that people are just going to stop coming up with ideas? That people are going to stop being entrepreneurs?
Right.
Miss me with that stuff, man. I mean, that's just a bunch of people that are trying to hoard the money they have and trying to tell us poor people what to do with and how to live. Well, you just need to live a little more frugal. You just need to live a little more. You just need to do it. You need to work a little bit harder. That's the problem. That 60-hour work week you're putting in, not enough. Got to be working even harder. Back in my day, when everything cost 25 cents, don't talk to me about that stuff. Actually get on the same playing field that the rest of us are on and see that this isn't right. And if you want restaurants to be able to grow and live, you really believe in buying local and supporting local? Put your money where your mouth is and vote for people that are actually going to pay attention to this stuff and actually do something about it. Because we've been talking about this since I was in junior high, and it hasn't changed. And I'm beyond the point of trying to be nice about this anymore or I always try to play the fence on the air here. You hear me do it all the time, especially with civic media taking over. I don't want to alienate anybody. I don't want to push anybody away. I back Civic 1,000%. I love what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But that being said, with this show that we do here, we've always tried to walk the line. You know, we try to bring everybody. Everybody's welcome and all that stuff and everything. There are certain things that I am not going to apologize for. I am not going to make, try to make everybody feel okay and kumbaya about. And when it comes to, making the wage gap, bringing that closer together, this is one of them. Like, enough is enough.
Well, and that's where I struggle with this. I think it's a wonderful concept. The difference between restaurants doing it and the subscription services doing it is the subscription services, that's all they're doing. Yeah. And the restaurants are trying to manage both in person and this. The other thing is making it cost effective for those that can't afford to do it. You know, to pay $140 a month for a subscription, that's unrealistic for a lot of households and incomes. If you can figure out ways to create opportunities for people that maybe might have more of a financial struggle to be able to participate in something like this, then yeah, make it worth it.
Mm-hmm. That's why I really like the $6.99 delivery subscription, because if you're maybe your family doesn't go out to eat, but you might order delivery once or twice a month, and if you can pay the $7 for the delivery subscription, that might actually save you money.
So, and especially if it's a restaurant that you order from on a regular basis, to be able to give them that money rather than an app like DoorDash or something like that, where you can pay $10 a month not to have a delivery fee.
Well, and then they can actually have a dedicated delivery driver that gets a decent wage. And it's a win-win on both sides then.
Yeah. Because the good way to look at it is, if you consider what the delivery fee might be, you're just prepaying your delivery fee.
Right.
With that subscription.
All that being said, I'm very hungry. This hour has made me extremely hungry. I'm going to go find something to gnaw on during the break. We'll come back with some That Ain't Right stories. Good stories of the day. Plenty more coming up for you right here on The Morning Show at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back, everyone. Morning Show here at WFHR. Serious comedy start your day. We hope you're having a safe, good Monday out there, everybody. Be on the lookout for each other and take your time on those roads today. Got some good stories of the day coming up for you. Well, I got to start with this one right here. This is a bit of a That Ain't Right story. Here's a brilliant way to find out if a person is actually into you. Some 22-year-old guy has been trying to track down his dream girl he met at a bar after she only gave him part of her phone number.
Okay.
She wrote it on a napkin along with her name, Jackie, but she left out two digits on purpose. And at the bottom, she wrote, "Trust me, I'm worth it." She put the area code and everything but the last two digits. Basically, she wanted to see if he'd go through the hassle of figuring out what those two missing numbers were. There were 100 possible combinations.
Wow.
His cousin tweeted about it on Tuesday, and most people seem to think it's a fun idea. Some say it's a sign she's demanding and high maintenance, but it didn't actually come out of nowhere. At the bar, they bonded over true crime shows, and he bragged he can always solve the crime before the show ends. So the missing digits were a challenge.
Okay.
And now there's an update, because you may have heard us do this story before. That's all we had before. Now there's an update, though. His cousin posted again the other day, and after Jackie saw his post go viral and DM'd him, the cousin told her there were still around 50 numbers to try. Her response was, quote, "He may not be as clever as he thinks. Give me his number. I'm taking over this operation." So it does sound like she's reaching out to him and is going to try to figure it out. But, I mean, this guy has, I mean, tried 50 different combinations, has been trying and everything. So I think that's kind of cool. If they do end up together and, like, this goes the way my romantic heart wants it to, what an awesome origin story.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very cool origin story. Also, guys, women are tired. All right? Women are tired. Single life is not easy on men. I cannot imagine what it is like to be a woman. I'm surprised we haven't seen more stuff like this. Like, yeah, you seem cool, you seem kosher, but we're at a bar or we're at this setting. I don't know if I can necessarily trust that this is right or anything like that. I'm going to make you do a little problem solving.
A little work.
And honestly, I'm serious. I really don't think this is not only a bad idea or that ain't right story or anything. I actually think that this might be a new trend that you could see.
Yeah.
And I would not blame women for this. Now, my that ain't right part is the guy bragging. Don't brag about stuff that you don't know where. Yeah. First off, a first date, let the conversation brag for you. You know, I believe that you could do a little more of that kind of thing. Like, well, I do this, and this. How do you spend your time? I do these things. And maybe one of those things is volunteering. And you mentioned that. And, you know, maybe it makes you look a little better. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm horrible at dating. I don't know what I'm talking about. But I'll say, like, don't go talking about, like, yeah, I'm a Columbo. I can pretty much solve anything. Well, don't be surprised if she challenges that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a big part of relationships, especially early. family relationships. I don't want to say challenging each other, but figuring each other out, feeling out the situation and everything. Hey, is this person a BSer, or is he just saying this because he's proud of it? There's nothing wrong with being proud of something. Mm-hmm. There's another thing about bragging. It was a little different.
Yeah, there's a really fine line between that, though, when you're first starting to date.
Yes.
Because you need to be able to have confidence mm-hmm. and speak about yourself and your likes and your interests and what you're good at. But you need to be able to do it in a way that doesn't come across as bragging. And when you're just getting to know a person, that's you don't know what they would interpret as bragging and what they would just interpret as, oh, hey, they're just talking about themselves.
Self-deprecation.
Yep. Well, and I love how she called him on it.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, okay, if this is who you say you are, then here's your chance to show it.
Mm-hmm. I think that you can compliment yourself whilst also being self-deprecating mm-hmm. and laugh at yourself and those kind of things as well. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that gets uncomfortable for me, a student will ask me, you know, who are some of the people you've worked with? And I'll say, well, hang on a second. I got to put my back brace on because I'm about to drop some names here. I'm about to name drop, you know. Mm-hmm. I try because I get uncomfortable with that stuff. But
right.
To me, that's one of the ways that, I'm not saying that works, but it's one of the ways to kind of like work around it. At least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you got to be able to do that with class too, because some people try to do that and it just comes off as it's cringy.
Trust mm-hmm. me, I know. I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
I know.
But I'm thinking of instances in my life when I was mm-hmm. still learning that skill set and still working on mm-hmm. it, and still. Mm-hmm. And I think tone goes a long ways too.
Absolutely.
I think that's if I'm
Which
talking.
Doesn't come across well in text.
No, it doesn't. Again, one of those things I know very well. we got some good stories of the day. I don't know if we'll have time for all of them. I really wanted to make room for this one. And it comes to us from thegoodnewsnetwork.org. A shout out to them. You can find this article right at their website, goodnewsnetwork.org. Motorcyclists can soon be safer thanks to a company that produced the world's first airbag suit.
What?
The garment is made from the strongest denim on the planet. Even more unique are the airbags that activate via small CO2 cartridges whenever the rider falls from the bike. The trigger mechanism is a tether connecting the jeans to the motorcycle. When the equivalent of a road accident occurs, the tether creates a puncture in the cartridges that inflates the airbags.
Cool. Wow.
If the rider is thrown from the bike, a protective air cushion is instantly deployed. Afterward, the CO2 cartridges are replaced. While the airbag handles the impact forces, the single-layer denim fabric called Aermalath handles the abrasion forces, according to officials from the Swedish company Airbag Inside. They claim they have tested the MoCycle brand jeans at speeds up to 45 miles an hour. With only minimal abrasion to fabric. To protect the spinal column's first bone with airbag technology is groundbreaking because spinal column injuries are the ones paralyzing motorcycle riders. These are one of the more consistent ones, of course, along with head injuries.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I like this. I think this is really cool.
I want to meet the person that was willing to be the first tester of this technology.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I'm showing Beth a picture of them.
Wow.
They are very basic denim with
they
just
are.
A couple of little, if you look closely, you can see some differences here mm-hmm. and there and everything. I think that this could be, like, especially if, you know, bikers make this their own and they really own these kind of things. Mm-hmm. Like, really, and I don't mean own them physically. I mean, like, own it, like, in a way of, like, really using these.
Clean
like,
it.
Hey,
yep.
These are cool.
Yep.
Because hey, this is what it comes down to for a lot of that world. And I only say this as a friend of many, many bikers out there and knowing many bikers out there. What are the seniors doing?
Mm-hmm.
How the people that taught them how to ride a bike, what are they teaching them? What are they showing them? Are they doing these kind of things? Because mm-hmm. most of the people that were raised by people that didn't wear a helmet are not wearing helmets.
Right.
And I look out for our motorcycle riders. I like motorcycles. I'm a fan of them. Harley, I should say. I do not have any empathy or sympathy for somebody that's going to go 70 miles an hour on roads like we have today without a helmet.
Right.
That's your personal choice. You didn't want to wear a helmet. That's more power to you. Then you're going to get what comes with that if you have an accident. So I think these things are really cool. I don't know how much people are going to use them. I hope people do, but I don't know. I don't, because a lot of it comes down to the look factor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people care much more. It's funny to me that image means so much to a lot of, not all, but a lot of motorcyclists, when it seems like that was the opposite of what was the intention of it and everything. It was never about image and look and everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas some people, that's their approach to it.
Right.
They watch too much Sons of Anarchy and all of a sudden they think they could be in a biker gang or something like that. I don't know. I'd like to see this be cool. I'd like to see this be a cool trend in something like that. I hope that's what happens with it.
And they're stylish.
I don't think they're bad. Yeah, I don't think they're bad.
I had to look them up because, of course, the first thing when we're talking about this and that you're tethered to the bike is what activates the CO2 cartridges. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had to have a skit pop up in my head of the biker riding up to the bar, you know, being all cool, forgetting to untether.
Yep.
He gets off and the and it wasn't, you know, the look nice looking. I mean, because this looks like almost like he's wearing chaps once they're inflated. That's kind of what it looks like to me. But in my mind, he became the Michelin Man.
I like that idea of being like, that's the new look that for bikers. that looking like the State Park Marshmallow Man. Like that. That's a good one. Another good story of the day. We got two more for you. Our friends over at Chatterbox, a big thank you to them for sponsoring The Kitchens Open. Get some good food in your life and check out Chatterbox Restaurant. They got a great Facebook page. Encourage you to do that. And we, of course, want to give a shout-out to the Winter Farmers Market as well, being held at every Saturday at the Moravian Church from 9 to 1 over at 310 First Avenue South. You can find out more about that by going to their website, wrmoravian.org. And right over in the corner, there's a more section. You look into that, and you'll find market vendors and all your information right there.
Yep.
Both of you, thank you so much for a great show today. You guys have a great day out there. Be safe.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks,
James.
You too.
We'll have more morning show for you tomorrow right here at WFHR. Stick around. We got Playmakers coming up. We got Coach Peckman joining us along with Randy Paul, all coming up here on Playmakers in just a few at
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.